Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
We are tonight's entertainment.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are indeed tonight's entertainment. Welcome to another edition of Protesis Prime Time Show, presented by the Amp Radio Network. I'm your host, Proteus. And I am not joined by anyone at this moment right now, so I'm going to go into a little bit of a public service announcement. Before we get the show started, and I wanted to bring this up and mention why I was not on last night's show with Smack My Picks Up Edition. I had a little bout with depression, and I just wanted to throw it out there that if anybody is suffering through any kind of form of mental illness, and you know, find someone out, and speak to somebody about it, because it's very important for us to speak about such things. Anyways, I am now being joined, I believe, by the man, the myth, the legend, Dean from Georgia.
Georgia. Georgia. The whole day through.
Am I correct, Dean? Is this you? Are you going to speak up?
Yeah, no, let my music play. What's up, Pro to the D's Nuts?
Pro to D's Nuts. Nice.
To D's Nuts, I like right? That one. The Pro to D's yeah. Nuts, yeah. Right?
What's going happening?
On? Not,
not much,
I just,
man. Just chilling.
Yeah, I just got in Savannah. I stopped by this little cafe having some Thai, it's like a Thai soup dish. And Tank 7, which is like a farmhouse ale. It's really nice beer. So, no, life's good right now. Yeah.
Right on. I appreciate it. Every time we talk a little
MMA with you for about a half hour, you know?
Yeah, sounds good to me. I appreciate your time. Every time I seem to call you recently, you're always doing something fun. I mean, the last time, two times ago maybe, was it, that you were in Savannah drinking and partying and carrying on? Sounded like a great life that you are leading, sir.
Yeah, just, you know, you work hard, you play hard, you know.
Sure, that's what I hear.
Yeah,
anyways, I digress. So let's get into some MMA until we wait for Showtime to join us. I was on the show today, on the Junkie Show today, embarrassing myself. But I asked Andrew Simon a couple of questions, and I thought it'd be cool to get everybody's point of view on this, and then we'll go into, I know what you want to talk about, and that's the Korean Zombie's return. But I asked Andrew Simon, because he was he's a TV executive, I asked him about Conor McGregor and the seeming battle between the two entities of Conor McGregor and the UFC. Conor McGregor, obviously, if for anyone who doesn't know, came out with a pay-per-view Q&A, which he hosted on the weekend, this past weekend, with Errol Hawani being the interviewer. And I'm sure it costs a whole bunch of money. But Dean, let's get you to weigh in. Like, what do you think about this battle going back and forth? I mean, it's been brewing. We've been seeing it coming for a long time. It's been bubbling to the top. What says you, and how, if you were the UFC, how would you handle your creation, Conor McGregor?
That's a tough one, but you know, they can't let, you know, they're a full corporate, you know, a conglomerate corporation, global corporate. They can't let one person, you know, no one's irreplaceable. You know, they have tons of stars. Look at a couple of years ago when GSP retired, Anderson Silva got beat, And everyone's like, oh, what's going to happen? And it was like, oh, everything's on Ronda Rousey's shoulders. Then Ronda Rousey got beat. You know, it's like they're just continuing to build their stars. New people are going to come along. Like, you know, although Cody Garbrandt beat my Dominic Cruz, but you know what I mean? If he could have a couple of performances like that, he got the attitude, he got the spunk. I just think, you know, they have to, I don't know, the UFC has to get him in a grasp. You know, if they tighten up on him, you know, he's made enough money, he could do whatever he wants to do, but they can't let one person, you know, control. Although he is doing the most numbers and most, but they could put together other exciting fights. If they toned down a couple of cards and made a couple of, like, all-star cards, like, throughout, more, you know, more often, they would still get, you know, those numbers.
So yeah, here's the thing. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
I just think that it's, you know, they're building this thing, and you know, the more amazing things he does, like, the more he's gonna have even more control. You know, I guarantee, like, you know, when WME, IMG, you know, they were buying the stuff and they thought everything was looking great. They had Brock Lesnar, they had Ronda Rousey coming back, they had, you know, Conor McGregor a little more on a tighter leash. You know, he wasn't so wild, you know, and then it comes back, and now Conor McGregor making that type of money, and now everyone's like, pay me, motherfucker, you know, it's,
yeah.
I guarantee they didn't see that. I know they have tons of plans, and, you know, but I'm just curious what the UFC sold them and what they were anticipating.
Yeah, I remember having a discussion with Buffalo Blue on this program before the show, and I've mentioned it on the previous show. You know, I asked him, you know, whether or not they saw it. Was my question was referring mainly to the class action lawsuit that was going on at the time, and it is still ongoing. But I mean, my question, and it's still kind of pertinent now, is like, did they see this coming? Like, did they see USADA coming?
That,
like,
too.
Like you just said, like, what did the UFC actually sell them? And I brought this question up before on this show too. But I mean, do you think this was the best pitch ever by, you know, Lorenzo and the Fertitta brothers? Like, what did they actually tell these guys?
No, they got out when the frying pan was scorching hot, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they were cooking with the hottest grease ever. You know, they got out the ideal time. Will, you know, they come around and rebound? Yeah, but to make up that much money, considering – what, 2016, and was their biggest, I think, pay-per-view year? And you think the money that they made on it, I think Blue was saying, I remember hearing them, that after profits, after everything, and they made, you know, payouts, that they probably made like $250 million or something like that on, like, their biggest venue. Like, you got, you know, pay-per-view, then you get the Fox card, and, you know, did some of their deal, which is at the ender, at the latter part of the deal, like with the Reebok and stuff. But to make up that $4 million purchase, you know, you're talking about, that's going to take years and years to years to recoup your money.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and then you have
USADA
coming in, taking down cards, you know, this person's gone, and, you know, all of a sudden, and then, oh, I didn't even think about, like, the whole John Jones issue. You know, that was, you know, they had the big superstar in John Jones. Now he's been out for a while. So I know they're probably like, you know, the other couple of people that had bids out there, they're probably like, woof, God, we got lucky.
Yeah. Well, that brings me into another point of news that is really hot right now. It's, I totally forgot where I was going with that, Dean. So let's completely move on.
Okay. No, you said about something on the news. What's on the news?
Yeah, it had something to do with you, with what you had to say. And then my cat started going off and behind me and I got distracted. So I apologize. But there was another question that I wanted to ask you. Did I ask Mr. Simon earlier today on MMA Junkie Radio? I mean, and he gave a very good and astute answer, because, as I knew he would. But here's the question to you. We're talking about Conor McGregor fighting Floyd Mayweather, and on this show we've gone through the different phases of acceptance of this fight, like everyone else has, and it seems to be being pushed even more in our face. Now, my question to you is, with all these fighters getting their boxing licenses and seeing that that's a trend moving forward, now, if the UFC decides to promote a boxing event with, you know, Floyd Mayweather or with Conor McGregor, do they run the risk of losing the way they're running the UFC right now? Do they run the risk of having to bow down to, say, the Ali Act? Your thoughts?
I don't know all the details about the Ali Act, but I know, like, you know, they're going to spend all this money in promoting a exhibition. That's what it is. It's not going
right.
to be a sanctioned
yeah.
fight. It's not going to be sanctioned by anything over an exhibition. That's if Floyd, who usually makes near, you know, $100 million on each fight, is he going to come down or in regards to his guaranteed money, which that's what he's more worried about. He's more worried about the guaranteed money. Yeah, the pay-per-view could come through, but that's unknown. That's an unknown, you know, determinant on how many pay-per-view buys you're going to have. They have metrics and stuff to try to determine and give a good estimate, but nothing set in stone. I hope they don't do it. I really don't. You know, I've heard a couple little arguments. I think there was one where they were just saying how, because basically Floyd walks around at maybe like 150, 155, and you know, Conor does the cut down to him, but then when he goes into the ring, he's definitely a much bigger guy in his angling. But you know what? I think if it's strictly boxing, Floyd boxes with bigger guys. Probably he's done it throughout his entire career. You know, especially when he fought someone like a Canelo, even though he made Canelo come down in weight, but he was still a bigger guy. And you're talking about polished, you know, professional elite boxers compared to Conor McGregor, who has funny movement and a very good left hand. And, you know, they're like, Floyd doesn't do well against southpaws. He still trains and he still's beating the best of the best at southpaw, even though it was a little past their prime, but like, say, Manny Pacquiao, you know? I hope they don't do it. I just, you know, he needs to go in there and fight the winner of Habib and Tony, and just let Aldo come up or something like that and make another super fight, or Nate Diaz, you know, they fight there or something. But I wouldn't mind seeing him fight Nate Diaz and come around fight Nick.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so the question I was trying to roll onto earlier on was, it's really big on the news right now that, or one of the topics of conversation is that the first quarter for the UFC is very light. You know, there's not many stars available, and we're seeing stars or shows with, you know, just the people that the hardcores know that, you know, this first quarter is probably not getting sold to the casual fan at all. And I don't know if any of the pay-per-views are going to be, you know, in this first quarter are going to sell very well. So here's the question that everyone is on everyone's mind. Is that going to affect the UFC in a negative way? Or do you think, as we've seen them in past years, that they could bounce back at the end of the year?
They've had periods where they've had low periods where they've had a couple of pay-per-views significantly low. And then, you know, I think it was in 2015, they had some, like, kind of towards the fall, they had some, in, you know, some kind of low pay-per-views. And then all of a sudden, you know, the summer, and I think the fall of 2015, and then all of a sudden it was, you know, some big pay-per-views came across. You know, at the beginning of the year, they did the whole big push at 2016. It was just nothing but like champion, champion, champion on every card. I mean, they have them out there. You know, what champions are booked? You know, they're about to book Stipe versus JDS. They've been talking about in the works of Michael Bisping. They've already have the welterweight book, the lightweight, although it's, you know, they have an interim. Featherweight, there's nothing down the line, but you would think somewhere, you know, maybe a Brazil card or something like that, they're going to put Holloway versus Aldo. I mean, there's fights out there. It's just, it's I you know, nowadays, they kind of like with this, so many cards, they wait to like 6 months, 6 weeks out, 8 weeks out, and then that's when they hitting you with the headliner. So I think there's still a lot of time. I think just people are just probably used to them being a little bit more vocal on who's on what card, but they still got plenty of time to put together some really strong fight cards. But, you know, as a hardcore, what card, you know, sometimes it's those cards that you don't think about and that turn out to be great. Like the one that, you know, was it 206 you went to? On paper, it didn't look like it was going to be a great card, and it turned out being one of the best cards of the year.
So. Yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, you never know, but I mean, they're not in the business of selling stuff after the event, right? I mean, the UFC is in the business of selling tickets and pay-per-views beforehand. So I don't know. I don't know if this first quarter is going to be. I've said for the longest time that, you know, the pay-per-view in the way that they're trying to sell it to us right now is probably dead. You know, I mean, you cannot expect people to throw down, what is it, $70 in HD for pay-per-view, you know, once or twice a month. I mean, maybe the elite of the, or the people who are making a lot of money in the world can do that. But, you know, your regular Joe that wants to watch the UFC can't afford that kind of stuff. So it'd be interesting moving forward, Dean, to see what happens. And go ahead if you want to comment.
No, I agree. You know, you get that individual, you know, that lives paycheck to paycheck. They can't. And then they're forced to go to, you know, to like some establishment and watch it. And, you know, the UFC's not getting that many pay-per-view buys on that, you know. So
I think
go ahead. No, go. Sorry, there's a little delay. So
yeah, I know it's unfortunate. I apologize. I think that if they went back to like more of an older pay-per-view model, and of course that would mean that they would have to make less money on pay-per-view. But I think with this new TV deal that's coming up, they won't have to worry about that moving forward. So they can do a lot more of these free shows that maybe can be on a network, on cable or satellite or whatever, what have you, you know, ESPN or whether it be Fox, and make money that way from those kind of deals. And then, you know, do, you know, 8, maybe 10 pay-per-views, maybe 12, maybe do one, you know, one a month and make your pay-per-view money that way. I think maybe, you know, until we can see more new stars coming out, maybe that might be the way to roll moving forward. Thoughts?
No, I totally agree. I mean, you know, you think like all the traditional cards, they don't even have, they're not even announced yet. You know, normally there's the Memorial Day card that aligns with the Junkie Gathering, you know. There's a fight card, I think it's a pay-per-view 2 weeks prior in somewhere in Texas that they're having, and they have no card scheduled for right now during Memorial Day weekend. Then, you know, usually by this time, they're at least announcing, they put the card. They may not assign a headliner to it, but you usually know the whole year in advance on like where the pay-per-views and, you know, where the location and stuff. And if you go look on the rumors tab junkie.com, MMAJunkie.com, you don't see any of that. All the only thing you do is see the international organization of 1FC. You barely see any UFC cards or any other cards.
Yeah.
It's unique because over the last several years, it wasn't like that. They usually had it populated and they were announcing these fights. Maybe it's a different approach that they have. Maybe they found out statistics that by promoting the, you know, by doing less than 3 or 4 months out or less than 6 months out is the way to go, because then they build up the excitement rather than so many fight cards out. And I know, you know, maybe they got to be something. There's a lot of smart people that get dressed up in a suit and tie that works over in those offices in Vegas, and they have all the numbers that they're able to analyze and do analytics and metrics and determine and, you know, forecast particular sales and events and to see what it has to do, like what location, during what time frame, when's the best time to hit on any fight card, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe this is something that they're studying, you know? I'm just so used to years and years and years, and that's just a different mentality coming with, you know, that could have probably just been the Fertitta's way. We need to do it this way. And then someone came in and was like, that's an old school way of thinking. Let's change, you know? Let's change how we approach our promotion and our marketing. You know, maybe that the other way they're spending too much money in marketing, putting the fight out too far in advance, you know, those tours and the commercials playing for months out, you know, maybe this is a different approach. Yeah. They realize that they don't have to, you know, spend several million dollars on TV commercials and stuff like that. They only need it for a short period of time, like a month, and they're going to get similar sales, where if they did it for 2 months, 3 months, they're spending maybe 25% more in marketing with not the, you know, the numbers to support that. I mean, that could be, that's a very logical reason, you know, why they're not
absolutely
promoting fights. So, you know, they're like, hey, if we spend $1 million and we got $10 million from, you know, the pay-per-view and the sales, or say $15 million, well, they do it for 3 months. Now they spent like $2, $3 million and they maybe made $17. So your profit margin in between is significantly less. So that could be their approach. Yeah. I don't know. It depends on what numbers, you know. But I just noticed that there's been a trend, especially during the after the buyout, that the way they market their fights, the time frames and stuff, it's been significantly less, you know, through, you know, more and more. So I, you know, I mean, you're asking me my opinion, my professional opinion, just without seeing anything. That could be a strong possibility.
Well, we're seeing a lot of differences with the new empire coming in, and especially with the way they're treating people that they're in negotiations with. We're seeing that Mir Kasurkinov has been removed from the rankings, you know, other fighters have been removed from the rankings. Well, they just removed him from the rankings because he's in negotiations. But look, I don't want to get into that right now, Dean, because I've only got you for 7 more minutes, and I want to talk about the subject that you sent to me that you wanted to talk about on this show.
I want to talk about Serkinov for like 5 minutes. I want to talk about Serkinov
for
2 minutes.
About
what happened?
Okay, yeah, okay.
I didn't know what happened. Well, just tell me. Just give me a highlight. Give me the elevator speech of Serkinov.
Yeah, he is in contract negotiations with the UFC, and they have removed him from the rankings, which, of course, we know the UFC rankings don't mean shit. They've also removed Lorenz Larkin from the rankings because, of course, they're in negotiations with him, too. And, of course, there's one other fighter that I cannot remember right now because I'm on the spot, but they've removed
Bader?
All three of them
is it
from
Bader?
The rankings. Oh, and Bader,
was it Bader?
You're correct, and Bader. Yes, and Bader. They've removed Bader from the rankings as well. So that's kind of something new. I mean, that we've not seen as a tactic before, but that the new empire is definitely in full force and in full effect with that, with those plans to remove you from the rankings if you're in negotiations.
You know, like if they lose Larkin, that's sad, but you know, Larkin, that's a stacked division. If they lose two light heavyweights that are top 10,
yeah,
that's tough. I mean, yeah, you got Bader, yeah, who is top 5, and then Serkinov just had his big win over Krylov, and yeah, that's a big thing because they're both in anyone's ranking, easily top 15, but maybe even all top 10, both of them. That's a tough hit for them if they lose them. Like I said, Lockin's super talented and he has some great wins, but you're talking about an extremely stacked division. You got a lot of lightweights coming up to welterweight, and because the lightweights division stacked, and you don't get that many welterweights moving up to middleweight. So that's a stacked division. So like losing Larkins would hurt because he's entertaining and he's a junkie. You'd like to see him get the best deal he can, but hopefully everything works out for him. But if they lose the two light heavyweights, that's really tough on them.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I think that, like I just said, it's like shooting yourself in the foot, you know, or cutting your nose off to spite your face. I mean, these are two high-level, top-tier guys, and you've got to make a deal with them. And Serkinov. Yeah,
no, I'm saying especially with Serkinov, because they're making the big push about going into Europe and all these European countries. You know, you want to have a star from European country, one of the European countries, on these particular fight cards.
Yeah, well, at least some of they could sell over there. At least, yeah. But let's move on to talking about the Korean Zombie. We've got you for another 4 minutes or so. So you wanted to talk about the return of the Korean Zombie, and I've been seeing a lot of nostalgia coming out. You know, what was the best submission you've seen so far? Was it the twister, or was it the Ezekiel choke? And I agree. I mean, the twister will live on in infamy for me, but the Ezekiel choke was very impressive. Don't get me wrong, but to see the twister actually performed in front of me, in front of my own eyes, was something incredible. And Dean, we kind of talked about this on MMA Junkie I think it was Tuesday. I called in and I talked about it, that, you know, are they rushing the Korean Zombie back too fast? Are they kind of banking that, you know, if he wins, they can really push his star, you know, or maybe they can push Bermudez. But I think they're really banking that they can promote and push the Korean Zombie. So, one, let's talk about him coming back, and then what you think their plan is moving forward. Do you think that they've rushed him along?
You know, they probably talked to him. Like, you got to think, when he went out, he was number two, number three in the featherweight division. But everything's changed. So much changed. I think it was on CME. They said, you know, last time he fought, Conor McGregor only had one fight in the UFC.
Yeah.
So it's unique that the whole landscape of the UFC, the whole landscape of the featherweight division is completely different. Considering if it's Holloway of things, he could have with a big win and his name. One win, two wins. He's fighting for the title. But I think he could have looked impressive versus someone maybe a Elkins or someone in that 10 to 15 range and look just as impressive, and then still get a top tier, top five guy your next fight and be fighting for the title after you win that one. But who knows what he's been doing over the last so many years. They probably asked him, are you ready? But if you look at his record, I don't recall him doing that strong against wrestlers. And, you know, the only thing, if Bermudez could fight a smart fight, I like the Korean Zombie, but if Bermudez could fight a smart fight and, you know, try to slow down the pace, wrestle him, stuff like that, and try to grind them out, but you don't want to go in there and bang with, you know, the Korean Zombie, because he's got a chin from a granite chin. He's moving forward, and those type of barn fights, you know, although Bermudez has came back, but he's been dropped many times. He fought Matt Grice, a hell of a fight. He was dropped quite a bit when he fought Jeremy Stevens. You know, he's... in a lot of fights where, you know, he's on the verge of losing any moment because he's throwing caution to the wind and going at it. And I think compared to those two fighters, Kareem Zombie's a little smarter fighter. So if he tries to go in there and do an all-out war, I think it's Kareem Zombie will capitalize. If he goes in with a smart fight plan, it could be a long day for Kareem Zombie. I think the UFC wants him to win because they're trying to make that huge push into the, you know, Pacific Rim, that Asian market. And even though he's been gone for a couple of years, he's, you know, when you hear of great Asian fighters, he always comes to mind. And he's been gone for 3.5, almost 4 years. So easily with a win here, you could see him on a card and he's the headliner, which, you know, he came back in his first fight and he's a headliner. So seeing, you know, 1FC with, you know, not even a stacked card and going out, selling out huge shows and, you know, seeing the thousands and thousands and thousands of people that are going to watch, what, Brandon Vera or Ben Askren? Come on. Mm-hmm. Come on now. You know, the only true fighter that they probably have is Viviano Fernandez and, you know, or Shinya Aoki or someone like that. But these other fighters, and they're selling out and they're selling out huge stadiums. You know, they want to grab that market with a fighter like a Kareem Zombie. So I would think that the UFC is, you know, kind of selfishly hoping that Kareem Zombie wins. But, we'll see. You'll see how his training's been. Then you'll see if that the speed and the speed of the actual fight and the, not say jitters, but the rust is a real deal. But Dominic Cruz, he totally believed it wasn't, and he came in and performed. We'll see if Kareem Zombie could do the same thing. But, I mean, Dennis Bermudez is a tough son of a bitch. So yeah, it's going to be tough. I'm looking forward to that fight. I really am.
Yeah, it's honestly, you know, let me get my thoughts together here. You know, we as hardcore fans get excited for good fights. And these fight cards that we've seen at the beginning of the year, to me, have had a lot of good fights on them. I mean, you go back to last week, three of the four main event fights were fantastic. You know, they all had something going on in them. They were all very exciting. Did they have big names that they were going to attract a casual fan? Probably not. But you know what? I believe that the UFC needs to keep us, the hardcore fan, happy. And like I said, if you're going to splurge out, you're going to do 8, maybe 10 pay-per-views, whatever you want to do a year, go for it. Attract that casual fan, and get us out on Fox or get us out on ESPN and push our name that way and push our sport that way. Go ahead, Dean. You had something there.
No, when they had their superstars like the Jones and Rousey, like look at when Rousey fought Kat Zingano. They kind of, like you see Bellator following the same model. You know, they use these like kind of like circus fights and these over the hill fights, but they're big names, and then they try to put all their up and coming young stars. You know, like they did it with Georgie and Emmanuel Sanchez and Brennan Ward and Paul Daly, and they're throwing all these fighters on the card, the two Derricks, Derek Campos and Derek Anderson, you know, and they're building these fighters through their high power starts. UFC has done that too. You see a lot of times when they have that, when they know that they could sell just from the headliner or the main event and the co-main or the main event and the featured bout or one, you know, or that just top three is super solid. The rest of the card on paper to the casual fan, they're like, that's a great fight. You know, like picture if the Jason Knight versus Alex Caceres fight, that's a fun fight. And Jason Knight brings it. You know, but to the fans, I think they're not worried about that. Like, you ever go to a fight when it was a Ronda Rousey on the card, the fight when she fought Betch, and there were 7 main card fights, and it took forever, and it was just horrible to go watch the fight somewhere, and on those nights, and it's all you heard, people were just there, they didn't even know what the hell they were talking about, and all it was all about Ronda. You know, when you have that big star, the rest of the card, it doesn't have to deliver. And it's kind of like you see Bellator does it strongly. The UFC's done it when they have their major stars. So, but who are those big names now in the UFC? Ronda, is she coming back? Amanda Nunes ain't there yet. Holly Holm, I think they're hoping that she could possibly, originally they were hoping for Cyborg because Cyborg is the star. But with Cyborg with the thing, are they hoping on the name that, because Holly Holm's still riding on the name to the casual, to the casual fan that she beat Ronda Rousey? You know, like, would she be as popular a fighter? Would she be headlining these main cards, like the Fox card and the UFC pay-per-view, if she didn't win that fight against Rousey? No, she would not have. No way. Yeah. I don't think.
No.
Yeah. She would have been on a fight pass card, probably as a co-main.
Yeah.
You know, because she beat Ronda Rousey, they're going on that they're going on that fact.
Yeah. Yeah, and
you know, so but who are their big stars?
Time, right?
Yeah, and you know, is it Tyron or who in the welterweight? They're hoping that, you know, one of these guys, they need someone like, you know, like as much as they probably bang their head and don't like dealing with the Diaz brothers, but someone like that to go become champion.
Mm-hmm.
Like the most dominant champion in the world is Demetrius Johnson, but he does not sell fights, and he is the purest, best mixed martial artist, hands down. You know what I mean? Technically.
Absolutely.
But he never talks shit. He never tries to promote his fights so much. And you know, it's crazy is like, look at certain fighters like Max Holloway. Max Holloway, he could have been there so much faster. And even kind of Tony Ferguson, you know, before both of them, Holloway and Ferguson, they kind of just got it like a year and a half, 2 years ago where they started talking shit. Before that, I don't care. Whoever the UFC gives me, whoever Sean Shelby or Joe Silva gives me, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. And they won several fights. Like Holloway, he beat Shope. He beat a bunch of other people that were like lower tier people. And he kept fighting lower tier people until he kind of ran out of people. Then he started beating, you know, higher end people. Like he beat a Bermudez, he beat a Stevens, he started beating them. Then they're like, all right, now we have to push you. And there was probably someone in there in the UFC is like, you need to create more hype. You know, you're winning these fights, you're pushing up the ranks. You need to do something to create yourself a push. Or hopefully they had a smart man. He had a new manager, a smart manager to tell them that. But for the longest time, I thought that him and someone like Tony Ferguson should have been there a long time ago, but they never sold themselves. Now, they're beasts, you know, on the mic. You give them the microphone, they know what to say. They got the little catchy little phrases, you know. It's interesting. I just hope we're like, you know, certain fights, if they, you know, they do create these new stars, you know. If Yoel Romero beats Bisping, what the hell's going to happen with that division? You know, and then who's next in line? Sousa's not a talker, and Sousa's probably the best, one of the best middleweights hand down. I love Ronaldo Sousa, but only the hardcores know these people. You know, fuck, if you get Yoel Romero as a champion getting on the mic, I love you! Good this, good that. They're gonna be like, what the hell is this guy saying? You know, it's gonna be like, listen to Marco. The people online be like, what did Marco just say? I don't know. Please have him. I guess I gotta listen to like five other shows so I could interpret what Marco's saying.
Oh,
so that's how it is with you.
Bird.
Was that a low blow? I don't know. Sorry, but
no,
not really.
Low blow. It's all in love.
Not really. So. Hopefully he's on hold or he's listening right now. Hi, Marco. I love you. But, you know, you go down the divisions, like we talk about the superstars, like heavyweight, you know, like who, I asked this question to George one time. I was like, what is the money fight in each division? Doesn't have to be a championship fight. And I guess he was just thinking champion, 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 but they don't have to be. Like there's not, you know, you get the heavyweight, like Stipe's not a seller and he's going to go in there and there's not much there right now in the heavyweight division. Light heavyweight, there's a couple of matches, but only a few, There's only a few matches. John Jones versus either one of the ones fighting for the title, Johnson or something. Like, if Johnson wins, but he's too nice of a guy. He doesn't talk shit. He just knocks your fucking head off. He talks with his damn overhand right that not lays people out or makes them lose a tooth in the middle of the ring. But then you go down like middleweight. Like, if Romero wins, that's horrible for the UFC on a marketing standpoint. At least with Bisping, you got all of England. He knows he's on Fox. You know, he's promoting the fights. He's talking shit. You know, he's a huge veteran. You know, you get a couple other people up and down the line. I don't know who would make a huge marketable champion. Welterweight division, all right? You got Tyron. He's getting there, but he's pulling the Martin Luther King race card and stuff like that. And it's like, come on, you know, you're a champion. You know, you get tons of respect. They gave you the opportunity. They're the champion. You know, you're on TV. You know, don't sell that. You know, I just wish he was more in certain aspects. I maybe that's how he feels, but I don't see it that way as the worst treated champion ever. No. But if Wonderboy wins, yeah, you could get behind Wonderboy, and there's a couple other people, but they're getting a little older. But like a Diaz or something like that wins, God, that's huge. Or if they had Conor could come and win lightweight, as long as you got Conor in there and a couple things. For a solid year or two, they're good. Conor goes down to featherweight, same thing. You got a couple of good fights in there, you can market. But then you get the lower weight class, you know, hopefully Cody and stuff. But there's some stars there, but you don't have these ones where you're just like, put that guy on a card and that's all you need. No. Like, you need to complement it. And they have to strategically think when they're putting these cards together. Like, they can't just put, oh, this has a championship fight. Oh, it's good. No, like, you know, that guy's not selling, you know, they're going to be the Henan Burrows, the Demetrius Johnsons, the Jose Aldo, who historically always been over the last 5 years, when those guys are on main card, on the main event or co-main, minus when Aldo fought Conor, anytime Aldo was on a card, it was always in the lower echelons, maybe 250, 175, 225 pay-per-views. I think when he fought Edgar, it went up to like 3-something. Henan Burrow, if he's on the main thing, it was always low. The one time he fought Faber, it got a little push, but that wasn't because of him. It was because of Faber. Demetrius, horrible across the board throughout all the time. You know, I don't know what they have to do with him. I kind of wish that you had a Joey B one, so at least you had the idea of the trilogy. You know, that's really tough for him, you know, because he's just beats and he beats everyone so convincingly, but it's sad because there's certain people that I know, but like there's sad when they who's the number one contender. Joey B.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what's sad is with him is like certain people that they went against them, it's just like you wish, like, oh, I wish they had just like one or two more fights. Like, they're not ready for him. They need to, like, Horiguchi. Yeah. Horiguchi needed like a few more. Like, he was beating people where their records was sub 500. That's not impressive. Yeah. So Cejudo, he needed more time to work on his striking and everything else. Yes, great wrestler, but he needed more to his game. So he was still new to MMA. Like, it's just like those type fighters, like the ones I could think off the top of my head is like the Horiguchi, the Cejudo, who I think could have gave him a strong challenge, but they were just so early in their MMA, you know, their MMA experience. Like, they're talking about Pettis. And what's sad is because they're going to build on the name and – but he's way too young, and he's gonna get he's gonna mop the floor with him, you know. Just he's so inexperienced, he's just gonna dominate him. You know, it's just sad, but it's like who else do you go to? You have Wilson Hayes, yes, because he was supposed to fight him at 201, and then you have a couple other people that he hasn't beat yet, but he basically beat everyone. You know, it's that's a tough division.
He's basically Anderson Silva of 125, right? I mean, he's going to break the record. He's going to, because the competition just isn't there, and it wasn't there for Anderson Silva. And you know,
I think his competition was tougher. No, Anderson bought some kind of certain people. I don't think that even should have. I think they were just throwing people in there, like, all right, you fight them.
Yeah.
And they did. They did a couple of times with. They did a couple of times with DJ, Chris Carioso.
Yeah,
Carriasso.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, seriously? So. I'm gonna let you go.
Go ahead. No,
it's always great talking.
Go ahead. Finish your thought. No, finish your
I was just gonna.
Please.
No, no, I was just saying the Chris Carioso. No, I'm saying. I was going to let you go. It's always great talking to you. You know, I always like, a lot of times I don't get a chance.
20 minutes past the time that we're going to leave, get you, but go ahead and finish your thought. I apologize.
No. I just, you know, always enjoy talking to you. A lot of times I don't get to talk to, call into the show as much. Just always been extremely busy and got offered, and you know, with everything that's going on with my life and personal life, and then just got offered another job, so I'm debating that, but it's hard because as a adjunct professor, I could teach anywhere for multiple different schools. I'm a contract employee, kind of, somewhat. Well, when you become an associate professor, now you got non-compete clauses and you lose a lot of money. The only thing good with that is that you usually get like 3 months off. So like three months plus off in the summer. So there's a lot to, I don't know.
Right.
I have no idea. I'll go crazy. Probably go crazy, but
yeah,
I'll think of something.
I hear you.
Hey, great talking to you, man. Enjoy. Have a great week. Have a great
talking to you
weekend.
As well. I appreciate your time as well, Dean. Thank you very much. Yeah. No.
And go Patriots.
Go ahead.
And go Patriots. And go Patriots.
Okay. Good night, Dean.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Well, that was awesome. Because you know what? Speaking to Dean, see, this is what happens, guys. You know, every now and then we get caught up in our lives and we don't talk MMA for a while, and then all of a sudden we just let go. But I've had Showtime waiting in the wings here, so I'm going to go ahead and give him a call. That's why I'm running some music, so maybe the music will play while I'm calling Showtime, so I'm going to dial him right now. Showtime for Tennessee, come in. Said that he was having a bunch of trouble calling me as well, so I'm going to try him again, and hopefully this will get edited out in post. For all you live listeners, I apologize. We're going to try him again.
I'm sorry.
See if that works.
You called has a voicemail box.
No dice. So I'm going to go ahead and message Showtime right now on my device here. And hopefully he comes up. But I thought Dean brought up a bunch of good points, and it was a good conversation with Dean, because Dean's a smart guy, and he's got a lot of good perspectives on the MMA. I mean, I remember listening to Dean on MMA Junkie Radio before I ever started calling in. So Dean's an OG, and we you know, well, I listen to what he says. I mean, we were supposed to have Aaron from Texas on today to tell us about LFA as well. And I'm on team Texas there. You know, I mean, Aaron is one of the OGs as well, in my opinion. But there are a lot of voices from MMA Junkie that, you know, I hold in high regard, you know, And that brings me to another topic. I mean, there's going to be an MMA gathering this year, and it's, of course, in May on the Memorial Day weekend. And, you know, I don't know what goes as planned, but, I mean, just looking back on past events, and they took last year off, but I think, you know, hopefully they can come back with a big bang and have bang it out. So all you new casual fans, yeah, go check it out. If you got money, get down there to Vegas, go check it out. I'm going to try Showtime one more time right now. Not seem to want to be able to pick up on this. So this might be a quick show, guys. This show might be over right now.
I'm sorry.
Showtime doesn't pick up.
Not
much I can do about that. But at least we had Dean from Georgia come through, banging one out for us. Well, listen, I wanted to broach a couple of more subjects, but maybe I'll just broach them by myself. That's Mouthful of Diamonds kicks it right now. I wanted to talk quickly about LFA and I had spoken about this earlier on in a past show when we had a bunch of RFA people on, a bunch of RFA fighters, and we were discussing, you know, and not to be, you know, undermining or trying to be like disrespectful to RFA. I thought, you know, these guys really are, you know, the minor leagues, so to speak, of the UFC. And I think something that's come up in the news this recently or this week is that CM Punk is back in the news. He's looking for a fight, yada, yada, yada. And then this whole LFA announcement, you know, they want to be the minor leagues of MMA. And I agree. I mean, I said this, as I had said earlier on when we had the RFA fighters on, and, you know, I said this, they're going to be the minor leagues, and we need a minor league system. We need to be able to develop stars slowly, you know. This throwing them to the wolves in the UFC is not really the way we want to play, you know what I mean? It's not really good for business. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's good for them. And going back to CM Punk, I think his next fight has to be kind of, as I said earlier on when he was fighting on the show, I said, he needs to fight at a lower level. And I think perhaps LFA would be a great place for him to come back. And he's still on the Fight Pass. You know, that's a UFC product. They're paying him a lot of money, but at least you want to keep him in your grasp. You know, you want to keep him and control his rights and make sure that you guide his career, because you can sell him. And maybe him going up to the major leagues, so to speak, of MMA, and then dropping down to the minor leagues again is like a major league story, you know, or a kind of a Rocky story. I don't know what you want to compare it to, but maybe that's what they can sell. I mean, that's a good storyline. I'd buy into it. I know a casual fan would probably buy into it. A wrestling fan would probably buy into it, because, you know, Punk has got that Pepsi logo on the one side, and, you know, that's advertising right there. That's I can't imagine how much money Pepsi paid him to do that. Anyways, I digress. I don't think I'm going to get anybody else on the show tonight. Unless Tony is listening and he wants to call in and give his 2 cents worth. But if I'm not going to get someone else on tonight, I want to get back into what I was speaking to you at the beginning of the show, and get back into a kind of a mental health
conversation, because the past 2 days for me have been a real eye-opener. I've never had or experienced anything like that. And as I was saying at the top, I had a bit of a bout of depression, and I think it's very therapeutic for me to not only get it out to the person who, my wife, who I spoke to about it, to get it out of me, but to speak to you, the audience, about, you know, these kind of things, because they're a very taboo subject in our modern civilization, where we, you know, pack people on top of people, and, you know, millions of people live together, and we're all just expected to take in that large, you know, I don't talk to anybody aspect into our psyche, and that's not how we're supposed to live. We're supposed to be able to talk our problems out with other people. And, you know, I was very seriously considering not doing the show today, because I didn't want to do anything. You know, it was very debilitating for me. And thankfully I had someone here who I can talk to, you know, and I know not everybody has somebody to speak to, and not everyone does not have someone to talk to about, you know, what's going on in their lives. And I know that two major people in our sport, you know, two major figures in our sport have opened up their email to people. You know, they've given it out freely. You know, if you need to talk, I know Mauro Ranallo at Mauro Ranallo is a very big advocate of, please email me if you, you know, him, if you need to speak about anything. He's very, very pro conversation. And he has been for a number of years, and I just want to push that message out there. And also, you know, our boy James Lynch, you know, he's opened up his email. If you need to talk to somebody, you know, and you feel more comfortable talking to somebody that you might have something in common with, contact James Lynch. His email is out there, or DM him on Twitter or whatever, you know. There are plenty of programs for people, for anybody who needs to talk to somebody. And please, I would recommend that if you're having any, if you're living day to day with what I lived with for the past 2 days, please seek out, talk to somebody. I was in the lowest of the lowest places, and you know, thankfully DJ Tony was there for me. I could get, you know, be honest with him and be honest with my wife about what was happening. And, you know, it's only one day past, but I think it's important for me to put it out there. And if nobody's listening to this point and in the podcast anymore, I understand, but I think it's very important to say. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap this show up, because it doesn't look like I'm going to get, well, maybe we'll try and call Showtime one more time. Just, you know, maybe end on a lighter note.
I'm sorry.
Maybe get some more MMA talk. No, he's not there. So, well, let's try and end this show off then. I appreciate everybody.
Bitch.
And everybody who supports us, and you know who you are. Let's just run some of this on the way out, and I'm gonna say goodnight and love you all, and bye bye bye. I think we should play this on the way out. Don't change this, okay? Don't edit this out. Go ahead. All right, everybody. Thanks very much. I love you. Have a great night. I appreciate you tuning in. Bit of a short show, right on an hour, I guess. We'll end it with the same drop at the beginning. Have a good night, everybody. Love you very much.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.